Hey now, welcome to the City Off Campus podcast with your two favorite hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Today we're joined by a former Iowa football player and now co-creator of Washed Up Walk-Ons, Tyler Kluger. How's everything going with you?
It's fantastic, man. I couldn't be happier with the weekend's result. The Gophers rode the boat real hard and got us into the Big Ten championship. So everything is good if you're a black and gold fan right now.
So a question I have for you is, I don't know if you saw the video of Riley Moss on Twitter. Were you rowing the boat hard like Riley Moss while you were watching the game?
Not as hard as Riley was, man. That was incredible. They obviously Riley's from Ankeny and actually played with my brother on Centennial in the same class, and Jack's from Dowling. So two sort of Des Moines guys, and I think they were watching it in Des Moines. And then I saw a video of them on a table at a bar later that night, like with a Let's Go Hawks chant somewhere in Des Moines. So they had themselves a pretty good Saturday.
Talking about the Big Ten championship, then just kind of jumping into that, what are you kind of looking forward to see out of Iowa going into this game? What are you kind of hesitant about going into this game? And what are you looking forward to matchup-wise specifically, if there are any certain matchups you're looking forward to see between?
Yeah, I think outside of the game, actually, like football-wise, I think just the fact that, you know, I was fortunate to be a part of the 15 team and being on the inside for that was obviously a really cool experience. And I'll now be going to this game from the outside perspective and experiencing it as a fan. And I guess you could call me a media member, although I wouldn't go that far. And so it'll be cool to see the other side of the coin and sort of experience it. And just, I don't know if it'll be stress-free, but there'll be different stresses on me during the game on Saturday, as opposed to when I actually had the ball in my hands in 2015. So I'm looking forward to that. As far as the actual matchup, I think, you know, Michigan's an incredible team. They have two of the best pass rushers in the country. They are 1-2 in the Big Ten in sacks, in Aiden Hutchinson. And the other guy's name is Ojabo. They've got 12 and 11 sacks, and Iowa has struggled with their offensive line this season. And though they have put out their two best performances the last two games against Illinois and Nebraska, it's going to be a huge mismatch, our offensive line versus their defensive line. So that's probably a concern for the Hawks and for anyone who's a fan of the Hawks. Obviously, every time Iowa plays football, it's incredible to watch the defense and the special teams, and I'm a little biased as a former long snapper, of course. So I'm excited to see Caleb Shudak and Torrey Taylor in a dome, an inside environment. You know, it's a perfect like 72 or 73 degrees in there, and there'll be no wind, no cold to worry about. So those guys should be laced up and ready to go. And of course, Charlie Jones in the return game as well. So that's how they're going to have to win the game. And, I'm just excited that we have the opportunity.
So you kind of touched on 2015. Can you kind of talk about what that week of preparation was like? And did that week of preparation differentiate from a regular weekly season rivalry week type of game? Or
yeah,
what was that kind of process like?
It's a good question. It in many ways, it's the same. Right. You don't want to change stuff when, you know, things are going right and things are working. Obviously in 15, we won every regular season game. So it's like, all right, let's just nobody fuck this up. Like this is something where everybody just continue to do your job. And, you know, it's a different feeling because there's a little bit of outside media that gets done. There's a little bit more hype. You know, just the fact that you're one of only two teams left in the conference, there's a lot that goes into that. And as it gets closer to the end of the season here, you're also dealing with the academic side of things, right? So, I mean, you guys are probably in the thick of it right now, right? Like, when's finals?
Yeah.
Like 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I'd say.
Sheesh, that's tough. And so now you're trying to deal with finals and final projects or papers or big tests. And you're also trying to deal with the biggest game of your life. I mean, we in 2015 hadn't been to the Big Ten Championship the previous 2 years. And, you know, the biggest game we were in outside of that championship game was maybe, I'm not even sure we had been in a real big time environment before that. Probably the bowl game against LSU in 13 or the Tennessee game in one of the two bowl games. So everything is just a little bit edgier. Everybody's just a little bit more locked in. The complex, the facility is just a little bit more quiet. Everyone's watching a little bit more film. Every little dial that goes onto the machine is just turned a little bit more. And it's generally the structure of practice and what you do and all that is the same. But I think everyone just, they lend just one more, you know, one more notch of serious preparation to it.
Before we dive into like how you became a Hawkeye, one thing that I kind of want to tie back into, I've heard you talk earlier in the season about how after like the Iowa State Penn State game, you could feel that there was a lot of adrenaline, and especially after that Penn State game, there was a load that was taken off the team where they'd gotten over that first half hump and they were undefeated. And do you see that type of like adrenaline dump from Michigan, where this like entire season has been leading up to that final game with Ohio State? And I mean, obviously they expect to win, but the last decade it hasn't happened. And some people are saying, like Wolverine fans are saying, it's the greatest day in their life, and a lot of them are married. So do you like see that same type of feeling, or is it still like, are they going to be even keel rolling into this game?
That's funny. That's funny. Their wedding days must have been boring. it is. I can relate to that, though. Sports and other life moments are just sort of, it's like apples to oranges. But yeah, man, it's, you know, we had something similar actually in 2016 when we beat Michigan in Kinnick Stadium. I snapped the ball on Keith Duncan's last second field goal, and they, before that week before, had just come off some big win, and we had just come off of the opposite. We had gotten absolutely torched in Happy Valley against Penn State. And so it's hard to quantify what those effects are of a previous game. And in theory, it's a clean slate. You go out there, it's like, okay, now we get to play another football game. How would the previous one affect this? But I mean, I think you'd be naive to think that it doesn't have some effect, right? Like we experienced it this year. We played in the biggest game, although now looking back with a 7-5 Penn State team, the win doesn't mean as much, but at the time, it's the biggest game that Iowa had gone into hype wise, expectation wise, things on the line since 2006 when Ohio State came to town. So everything was built up. It became what it was. It finished under the lights, the Nico Reganey touchdown, all of it. And we came out that next week and we looked like a completely different football team. So I would say it plays some factor. Now, the fact that this is the first time Michigan is going to see Lucas Oil Stadium since the implementation of the actual championship game, it would be hard for them to overlook being in a championship game. But if there was an opponent they were going to do it against, I think it would be Iowa. I mean, you look at, from their perspective, they've got a lot to lose, right? We've kind of flipped the script here over the last 2 weeks. Nebraska had nothing to lose when we played them on Friday, which is one of the reasons that they were able to stay in the game and be a part of that and make it a competitive matchup. We're now on that side, right? Like, everybody thinks Michigan is going to win. We don't have a playoff spot to let slip through our fingers like they do. We don't have the adrenaline dump of, you know, like Nebraska didn't provide that crazy chaotic environment, right? We actually have a day of rest on them. We get that extra day since Friday. So everybody's body is going to feel one day fresher. And that will make a difference. And you're right. The way they celebrated that win was almost absurd. It was insanity. That's their third win in two decades against Ohio State. So I hope for it. I hope for that type of adrenaline dump. Even with it, I think they're still like a 2 or 3 point favorite, but I would say it plays some small factor. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you kind of how did becoming the starting long snapper at Iowa kind of happen? Like, which I've never worded it that way before, but like, how did you kind of, you know?
No, that's a pretty good question, because like that's nobody really talks about that position and how like there is a little fraternity to it and how it like the position gets passed down and you hold on to it until you don't anymore. And nobody really talks about it. So like, yeah, truthfully, like how did that process take place, like becoming a Hawkeye and then, you know, being the long snapper for how many years was it? Was it 4 or 5?
I was the starter for 4 years and I redshirted the year before. So It is a good question. And that's sort of a pretty clean way to put it. It's really something that I look back on often, and just because I'm still in the space and it's still relevant. And I don't have a great concrete answer as to one single thing that did it. I was a linebacker in high school. I'm 5'10". I was 5'10 then. I'm still 5'10 now. I was never bigger than 5'10". And I was slow. So, you know, freshman, sophomore year, I was already fully grown. Like I had already gone through puberty. I was a monster freshman football player. Like I was, if I would have kept growing, I would have been insane. You know, I was like 5'10", 190 and was like athletic as hell. And then everybody caught up and I was a middle linebacker and a long snapper. And I had been just because my uncle long snapped at Iowa State. And so my dad was a coach. He, you know, when it came time to actually start like kicking PATs in like 7th or 8th grade and they needed somebody to snap the ball, it's like, all right, you're going to be the guy who does it. Right. So I took over that responsibility and never really thought anything of it. Just like, all right, cool. I'll just add this to what I do. And sophomore year rolls around in high school. I start at middle linebacker for Marshalltown High School and I start at long snapper. And I did well. I was, you know, I was probably, I think I was like even elite all-state linebacker, but I knew that it wasn't going to be a Division I thing in college. And I wanted to play Division I somehow, some way. Like I just, and there's also this like back subconscious theme of my life where I always believe that there's more for me. So, and I don't know really know how to explain it. And it's actually, when I put it like that, it's like, well, that's fairly self-centered and maybe ambitious of you, but I just always felt like it wasn't out of reach. And the long snapping thing was like, well, I'm decent at this. My uncle did it at the Division I level. I think I can compete at that level if I got a shot. So I started going to special teams camps. And again, this is where sort of part of the luck comes in. I was lucky that for some reason I picked it up naturally and they rank you at these camps. Right. Mm-hmm. And I go to like the first one after my sophomore season heading into junior year. And I'm like automatically after the first camp was ranked all the way up at like 11th in the country. And so I'm like, okay, well, that's cool. I never really saw the guys I was competing against as like, cause like who cares about, you know, like how many people come back to their high school and they're like, yeah, guess what I did over the summer? 6th ranked long snapper in the country. How about that? Huh?
You know, well, I got to stop you real quick. Cause I had a buddy that was just like that. He did one of those camps. He got timed and he was statistically the fastest long snapper in the state of Illinois. So he threw it in that bio and he let everyone know he was the fastest. He was also the skinniest and the lightest, but the fastest. So
hey, I mean, hey, you can hang on to what you want. I wasn't going to be that guy, right? Like I was still, trying to be just the best linebacker I could be. And then the snapping thing was like a side gig, right? Again, I continued to go to those camps because when I initially got ranked high, I could see the writing on the wall. The classes previous to me, you could see like, oh, the top 10 guys committed to these schools to go long snap for them. And so I thought, well, shit, if I keep working and I can raise this ranking up a little bit, I might have a chance at really like snapping at a Division I school. And the dream became reality before it ever happened. It was legitimate. Like, there's a path to do this. And all I have to do is beat all these other kids out. And all these other kids are like kids who weren't athletic and they're trying to just use long snapping as a way to get into college and continue to play football. Whereas I was coming from the opposite direction. I was a super athletic kid who just wasn't going to be quite athletic enough for the position I was playing. So I was almost moving in my eyes. I was like, I'll settle for long snapper, right? Which really helped me when it came to recruiting, because they're looking at me as a long snapper. Okay, cool. Everybody can long snap. What else can you do? I was like, well, this kid's like pretty good. He can tackle, he can run, like all that stuff. So long story short, by the end of my summer going into senior year, I end up winning the biggest camp in America. I finished ranked number 2 in the country, although this camp was the last camp for our class and I beat the number 1 kid. So I don't know why I was never ranked. I'm still salty about that. And I'll go to my grave saying I was the best long snapper in the country. Regardless, that gave me a lot of opportunity. I was selected for the Under Armour All-American game to go long snap for that. In Florida, spent a week down there over Christmas break, my senior year after my senior season. And when that happened, that same summer, I had also gone to the Iowa State special teams camp, Iowa, Minnesota, Northern Illinois, Nebraska. Once I won that camp, I was contacted by Saban and Auburn and Miami. And so like, I basically had my choice of where I could at least go and get in front of the coach's eyes and then they would make a decision. I was Nebraska's second choice. I was Alabama's second choice. I was probably Auburn's first choice, but I didn't want to go down there. And Iowa was kind of always the team, right? Like, I was a Hawk fan growing up. My dad played there for 2 years in the 80s, 90 minutes from home. Like, that's just where I wanted to be. And fortunately enough, like, we got into the senior season and they were like, I think it was the first game of 2012. They played UNI and they host the recruiting day visits where they bring the recruits in and, you know, all the pictures you see on social media. And during the pregame meal where the coaches stop by quick before they, you know, move on to the team for the day over in the stadium, I'll never forget it. His name's Lester Erb. He's not at Iowa anymore, but he was the running back coach at the time. He's like, hey, you know, we'd like to, he was also the special teams coordinator. He's like, we'd like to offer you a preferred walk-on spot to come be a Hawkeye next year. And I was like, I was literally on the spot, might as well have said yes, but I was like, wow. You know, just very thankful. And then the week later I went to another recruiting trip, the same. And I was like, hey, I'm committed. I'm in. So I got my foot in the door, right? More luck happened. It just so happened that Casey Kreider, who currently plays for the New York Giants as a long snapper still, was going to be a senior in 2013, the fall of, and that was my freshman year. So I kind of learned under him for 4 months. And then the spring of 2014 rolled around and I was the only guy left on the roster after just being in the program for 4 months. So it was kind of just like, all right, you're our guy. And it wasn't all smooth sailing, but I stepped in. I didn't lose the job. First 2 years were okay. The last 2 years were really good. And then 4 years later, I don't know if this is official, but I always have wondered. I think I still hold the most consecutive starts like of any player in Iowa history at 53. So I was very fortunate. I got real lucky. And got to do a lot of really cool things.
So what was the pressure like on you when you're the only guy on the roster? You're like, It's your job.
It's a good question. I mean, honestly, I was very confident in my snapping ability. However, I did not know how to be a good teammate within the Iowa culture at that point yet. I came into college with the mindset that I was settling to be a long snapper. Like this reigned true throughout my career, but I still, to the day I stepped out of the program, believed that I could compete in the weight room and compete on the field physically. And I could do all the things that Josie Jewell and Bo Bauer and the linebackers and the athletes in the class that I came in with could do. And I had that kind of like standoffish attitude. I'm a mouthy guy. Obviously I'm talking on a microphone as part of my gig now. So that worked out. But I was like, I was not afraid to get in conversations or maybe open my mouth when a young guy should probably just stay quiet and put his head down and work. And that wasn't exactly received well. And you pair that with me basically just being given the job, right? Like where in the Iowa culture, it's very much so you need to earn and prove that you've earned the spot. They didn't really have a choice. They just put me there and it's like, okay, you're the guy, but you didn't do anything to earn it other than you're the only long snapper we have. So those things led to me going through some learning curves of just how to be a good teammate and how to be a good Division I football player. Outside of that, there's always the pressure of the actual job, but I felt pretty good about snapping a football. That first year, we played UNI again, the first game of my career, and our first snap was a touchdown PAT snap, which was nice. You get the feet wet. You can throw a short one back there without having to throw it the full 15 yards for a punt. And then once you get the first one in, the second one feels better. And with every single consecutive one after that, it just gets more and more second nature. But the pressure was more to just live out that 4-year career. Like you said earlier, that job is mine until I lose it or until I do something to mess it up. And I was, I'm sitting there going into my true sophomore season thinking I have 50 plus games ahead of me and an incredible story of a career as long as I don't mess this up. And so that was sort of the goal, like just figure out how to make this thing smooth for the next 4 years.
You say, like, honestly, it sounds like reps and reps and just doing it over and over gave you that confidence. How many reps did it take for you to be confident in order to carry out the polecat?
We ran it a lot, man. And I scored touchdowns every time in practice. We probably ran that thing 30 times a day for the 3 or 4 weeks that we had it in before it was actually run. So I'm sure I ran it like over 100 times before we actually did it on the game field versus Ohio State. That one was pretty simple because it was literally just me and Colton out on our own. It was snap it like a one-handed shotgun snap like we did it with was a little bit weird. So that's mostly what I was practicing, just making sure that was good. I didn't have to block anybody, so I could kind of look back and make sure it was all right. That was what I was most worried about. And then Colton obviously had to make the throw, and he got it done enough to where I could come back and grab it and pick up a few yards before.
I don't even know if you can call it a throw. It kind of more looked like a shot put.
It was a shot put. Yeah. It was.
I've always thought that it was just, he put you in the toughest position because you didn't want to like overrun it, but you didn't want to slow down.
Right.
And it just looked like the most awkward catching motion for you.
It was. It always comes back to, oh dude, you were so close. If you just didn't trip. I think of it oftentimes the other way, like, oh, what if Colton doesn't throw that over the 6'5" backup linebacker's hands and it gets tipped and I don't even have the chance to catch the ball, right? Or maybe he does get it over him, but it doesn't quite get there. And I'm standing there like, oh my God, I just had a chance to catch it. So glass half full kind of guy. And I look at it that way. And I'm pretty okay with how it turned out.
Now, were those the favorite jerseys that you ever wore? Uniform? Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. Do you ever see any scenario where they whip them back out again and just...
Well, those jerseys we got to keep specifically. Oh, okay. So they would have to print. Yep. Yeah, they would have to print and run a whole new set of them. I could see a version of them coming back close enough to where people probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But those exact jerseys won't get brought out again.
Right.
Because well, at least 97 won't, because that's sitting in my basement.
Now, and when you initially get the long snapping job, like, obviously it never comes in your head right away, but is there ever that like little sliver of thought where you're like, man, like we could actually run a fake and I could be the one? Or were you just like, I'm only going to throw a ball between my legs for the rest of my college career? Like, did you ever think about that trick play scenario?
Yeah, you would be surprised how many trick plays are actually in the book. Early on, I would say in those first couple years, it was more like, let's just focus on like the job. And then, you know, Coach LeVar Woods is getting a ton of pub recently just because we've got Keith Duncan the past few years and now Shudak and Torrey Taylor, and deservedly so. And when he took over my senior year in 17, and really even the year before that, he was sort of shifting into that role. We started to implement a lot of not just like far out, hey, we could run this, but legit fakes that every single game week we were practicing some sort of fake that was schemed up for that team that week. And so, yes, junior year, I started thinking like, holy smokes, like we've got a several fakes here where I'm snapping it to different people or different scenarios. And I remember when coach came into the room and he looked at me and he goes, you ready? You're scoring a touchdown. And I'm like, okay. And we were close, but yeah, I was very excited to be a part of fun plays, right? Like just something that's more than just what a long snapper does on the normal. So anything that was even just a foot or two off the beaten path was fun to be a part of.
And then where did the concept of Wash Up Walk-Ons, the podcast, and starting with Drake and Kevin start? Was it something you guys thought of while you were on the team, or something that afterwards you guys were like, shit, I kind of miss like talking about it and just, you know, chopping it up? Like, you guys really just do every episode. Like, did it come like afterwards or during your guys' time at Iowa?
I would love to say that it came during, but man, it didn't even cross my mind. I had no thought of starting a podcast while we were playing. And it kind of, I think the inklings of the idea, right? Like the whole, the script was written by plenty of people before us, but I never made that switch of like, oh, we could do that. I listened to Pat McAfee in 2015, 2016, 2017. I was for 2-3 years and I never thought, man, I should do that after I get out of college. Just never crossed my mind, because at the time, I mean, I would even argue that like podcasts are still sort of on the up and up as like the new media. Right. And this is 6 years ago. So I was like, I love this show. I mean, Pat's got the ultimate life. I mean, if I could do this for a job, that'd be great. But that was just never, I was so locked into just focusing on football, focusing on school and what was my career going to be after college. And then, you know, we got out of the NFL, didn't work out, and it rolled around to that next season. 2017 was my final season. So we go to 2018 in the fall, and I think we get 2 or 3 games in, and I've got a group text like everybody does with their roommates. And my roommates were Kevin and Drake, and then Bo Bauer, Josie Jewell, and Ike Butker. And like, we would just have these conversations that were just so funny and entertaining and just wild shit that, like, you know, college guys do, they talk about, and they just have these conversations that probably shouldn't ever be released to the public, but they're so funny and entertaining. And we were having a conversation about a memory from our time with the team, and it was like, it just hit my head. I was like, man, we should find a way to put this out there. Like, could we, I think I was like, we should like write a book, or we should somehow. And then I was like, we could do a podcast. Like, that would work. And 2 days later, I had figured out how to get a microphone and how to publish one and how to put this thing together. And like 5 days later, we had our first episode.
That's so cool. So after you did the first episode, did you kind of see it as, we're just going to do this until we get bored, or like, we're just going to do this in our free time? Or like, what was kind of the, you know, after first launching, what was the initial goal? And then how did it kind of evolve into what you've kind of built it to be now as a legitimate Iowa sports media brand?
Yeah, the extended brand sort of appendage of what we do now, because it's, you know, financially, it's become a real part of my gig, right? Like, you know, like, I'm supporting myself off of this podcast that has since turned into a bigger thing, right? In the beginning, I mean, we didn't even think about, again, once we had the idea, money was never a thought. Like, I never even imagined that it would turn into a financial thing. We started on Anchor as our platform where we would release our podcast, and there was a monetization feature of that. But in the beginning, it was like, you know, there's the way that's set up, we were making like, I don't know, $100 a month. And that was with a bunch of listeners. So I was like, I don't know if this is ever really going to get to that, but I don't know what the plan was. It was just fun to do it. I think in my mind, you know, we were now a year out, and we saw this opportunity once we did start to be like, well, we know all the guys on the team right now, and we have all these stories, and let's just share our stories, and it'll be organic, and who knows how many we do. It was probably more of a selfish thing. Like, hey, this could grow our brand, right? Like, our personal brands. Like, my Twitter had blown up from, like, I think when I got out of Iowa football, I had like 1400 followers on Twitter. And within a couple weeks of me being out of the program, back when we couldn't tweet, you know, just some tweets that I had put out, people liked, and they liked the perspective of the former player. It was just a couple like tweets, and I gained up to like 4,000 followers, 4,500 followers, 5,000 followers. And I'm like, you know, this is where I started to see, like, okay, I would like to consider myself somewhat business savvy, and I know the power of social media. I've seen other people take their followings and leverage those to turn those into financial, you know, assets for them. And so it was never like I sat down, I'm like, all right, I'm going to take my Twitter, I'm going to take these 5,000 followers, then we're going to do a podcast, they're all going to listen, we're going to grow this following, then we're going to get sponsors. But in the back of my head, I think I just knew, like, okay, eyes and ears are important. Attention is important. And if we can get people to listen to us, eventually good things will happen. And then, you know, it just continued to grow. And I think a big part of it was just us being consistent. Like, the off season rolled around and we're like, all right, there's no football to talk about, but we know a shitload of Iowa football players, and we're just going to bring them on one at a time as guest episodes, and people will love it because no one's done it before. And that's the other thing. It's like, we got lucky. There were two people who tried this before. It was Anton Narinsky back in 2012. And who did it with him? Anton Narinsky and Drew Tate did a podcast for like 3 or 4 years, and it was off and on. It wasn't super consistent, but people loved it. And then they kind of faded because their lives went different ways. And I knew that if we were just consistent and we added a little bit of like business model to it and just put in effort, and it wasn't hard to do all those things because we love talking about Iowa football, that it would continue to grow. And you know, we're very lucky because we had the platform that most people don't have. People are interested because we've been on the inside. So we have all this inside info, and we grew from there, and we've gotten better at podcasting. Obviously the equipment has gotten better. You know, there's a whole, as you guys know, there's a whole lot more than goes into just you know, clicking record and talking. And I'd like to think that I've become a better interviewer, a better public speaker, more entertaining, funnier, all through this exercise of doing a podcast. And then, you know, it grew into people want merchandise. Hawks by a Million is a huge thing that, I mean, Big E said it on the game day show and it went berserk. I mean, it's all over the place. There's students that, you know, I've sent out all these flags and they're going to like apartments in Iowa City. And I'm like, holy shit, this is a thing that's like a movement. And it's, they're going all over the place. And so now we have like a merchandise leg of our brand that makes, you know, a decent amount of money each year. We have the advertising with our numbers and we just signed with iHeartMedia, which is huge, right before the season. And what they're able to do with advertising, like we're making an absurd, we're making a number, a dollar amount of money that when you tell people you make that much money doing a podcast, they go, hold on a second. What? Like it's like, holy shit. And then, you know, we also started a exclusive content platform over on Patreon, which has allowed us to take advantage of our really diehard fans who are just like, you know, they've never missed an episode. They buy every single piece of merchandise that we put out and they just can't get enough of us, which to us is still nuts, like crazy, you know, but Iowa fans are nuts. And we do extra podcasts over there and they get early access of the regular episodes. And when merch does roll around, they get discount codes. And once or twice a year, we do an exclusive merchandise item that's only for them. And 50% of their subscription goes to the children's hospital and all this stuff. So that makes money. The merch makes money. Advertising dollars make money. And it's become now I legitimately have had to start telling people over the past, you know, sort of really since we signed with iHeart, because that really took us to a whole new level. I'm like, they ask what I do. I'm like, well, I'm a health and fitness trainer, personal fitness coach, because that's what I went to school for, exercise science. But I also own my own sports media brand. And that is wild for me to say. And it doesn't feel normal or even right when I tell people that, but that's in its best description of basically what I do.
So, you know, one thing I've experienced over the last couple of years is friends and people I know here in Iowa City, you know, more and more people listen to you and there's more and more of a cult like following amongst some of your listeners to a degree that's just insane how bought in they are. And so I was wondering, how did you guys develop that? Like, was it like, you know, you guys strategically made certain types of content, changed your content over time, just kind of kept doing what you're doing, staying consistent, and people just loved it more and more? Like, where did you kind of see it went from like listeners who would listen whenever you posted to we need more?
Yeah. It definitely took time. We have one thing going for us that from the beginning was always, and you can go back and listen to the just god awful episode one, really episode one through like 70 or 80 were pretty bad. And I think that's a big theme here is if you want to get good at something, it's going to take a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like we just recorded episode 272, 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago. And the comfortability that we have in producing a show and making and knowing that we're entertaining and knowing that we can make the flow of the show go well. And on my end, who I do all the post editing, I know that if there's breaks or this or that, or Jack, you dropped out about 5 minutes ago, we can make sure that no one knows that somebody dropped out. Dude, I've had that happen 10, 40, 100 times. Right. And same. And we've been through it all. And so on the technical side of things, like just putting in the reps, similar to long snapping or, you know, shooting free throws, putting in the reps, you're going to get good. And you're going to eventually run into all these problems that, okay, like you figure out how to handle it. And then the next time it happens, you breeze right through it. On the content side of things, the one main thing that we have going for us and sort of really what anchored our success early on was no one can tell us what the fuck to do. And you hear me, I have a sort of a brash way I talk. I cuss all the time. So does Drake. For those that listen to the podcast, Drake is a literal psychopath. he's crazy. He has CTE. It's guaranteed. He's going to die when he's 50. And we joke about it. Like we're Barstool-esque. We talk about things that make people uncomfortable. We use words and language that are uncomfortable and that most people don't hear in their daily life when they go and they're an accountant, right? When they go sit at their cubicle. Every time we play Penn State, there's at least 3 kid raping jokes, right? Like that's not safe for work content right there. But people love hearing that shit because it's the edge. It's the, it's the taboo stuff, right? And from the beginning, when we started, we've had multiple people come to us and say, "Hey, we want to sponsor you, or we want you to be part of our network. We want you." And I turned down multiple offers along the way because I knew this thing was, bigger than what they were valuing it as, and we would have had to, regardless of which people came to us, I was handing over creative control and freedom, right? We can say whatever we want. We can post whenever we want. Now with iHeart, it's a little different. We're like locked into an episode a week, even though we do 2 a week. So it's not really a big deal, but and that's the thing is like, we were with a company called Blue Wire, who's an up and coming kind of podcast network, and they were great. And when we signed with them, it was like the number one thing: "Hey, have you listened to our podcast? Because we say some outrageous shit on occasion. And if we can't say that stuff anymore, we're not signing with you guys." Same thing with iHeart. Like, have you listened to our podcast? Because the way that we talk and the way that we describe things and some of the stories that we tell, they're not just a PG-13, right? This is a R-rated deal. And people love that, right? Pair that with, we're former players. People, the more they relate to us, the more cult-like they are now as part of our listeners. That all stemmed from, holy shit, these guys wore the jersey, right? Like, they actually wore the helmet. So there's this godlike status you have if you're just one of those guys. Probably not. I'm the most normal dude. But because I have those 4 or 5 years of experience, there's this awe, right? Right. The same reason like that you guys asked me to come on, right? Like, I have this unique perspective, and it's a perspective that is a very, very small percentage of people that have that. And so people want to hear about it. It's not because I'm cool. It's not because I have any talent. It's just, I'm the guy who made the decision to do a podcast with this former experience. So it's a little bit of luck in there, right? And then, the third part of that is I truly like to believe that, because there's a lot of people that try and make a podcast, even former guys who have our platforms, and they end up failing because they're just not disciplined enough. They don't continue it. We've had multiple players, teammates of mine, who have started a podcast and it just doesn't quite get there. Nothing clicks. And it's because I treated it like a full-time job as much as I needed to put into it from the beginning, to the point where now, dude, this is my 4th podcast today. I'm doing a podcast with you guys. I recorded 2 with you guys, I recorded 2 episodes for the main show this week, and I recorded 1 for the Patreon platform early this morning with Drake. Like, I did 4 fucking podcasts today. Like, what am I doing? Right? But like, when you treat it like a job, and that's what you put all of your energy into, and you make sure that the product, because the product continues to get better, right? Those reps, it makes you better. Yeah. When the product continues to get better, then people have this expectation of, damn, they're putting out a good show. Like, that's what we expect now. And so now I can't just go put out a shit product that sounds like episode 10. And so I have to put that effort in. And it's become a thing where, okay, I'm spending 20 to 30 hours a week on this podcast, on this brand, on the Patreon content, I'm working with sponsors all the time on the phone. I'm working with merchandise dealers. I'm doing shit that doesn't even make sense. I'm like, what is my life? Like, how did it turn into this? And it's just because every day I was trying to put out fires and make sure that we were putting out a good product, and it just kept growing. And a lot of it was luck. A lot of it was the platform that we were given, but a lot of it was, man, we just love talking about Iowa football. We love talking to our, you know, friends, many of whom are famous, right, in the world of sports. So that helps too. We just leveraged the shit out of every position and platform we had, and it worked.
How do you, you know, in terms of grow your content, grow your brand, when did the switch kind of flip where you're like, oh, we could do a merch line here, we could do, you know, this, or we could have a sponsor? Like, when did it kind of come on for you guys where you're like, we're not just doing the content anymore, but there's more here?
Yeah, I think we started and our first episode came out on October 3rd of 2018. And that following spring, we were asked to do a celebrity appearance at a golf tournament in Kansas City. Wow. And at the iClub throws like a charity, or it's not a charity event, but the iClub golf outing, right? And the iClub of Kansas City, the guy reached out and was like, hey, we love your podcast. We'd love for you to come down and be three of our celebrity guests. You know, you guys know how those things work. You get paired off with a group and you go and play around. And it was like, holy shit. Like, people want us to come and like, they're calling us celebrities, right? Like, this is a real thing. And the podcast has continued. And again, we had the luxury of such a big audience from the jump that people kind of told us where we should go, right? Like, hey, we want merch. Hey, we want that on a t-shirt. We would buy that. Hey, we want you to come to this golf outing. Hey, we want to do a meetup with you. I mean, this weekend is really like a culmination. It's the first meetup we've ever done because the three of us are all remote. Drake has lived in Arizona for the past couple of years. Kevin's still in Coralville, but I live in Des Moines. So every podcast we've done except for like two have been virtual. And we didn't let that hold us back, but we haven't been able to do like a real meetup. Game days in Iowa City, people will recognize us and be like, you know, Hawks by a Million, or like, come and meet us, shake our hands. Hey, love the podcast. But this weekend, we're about to have, I don't even know how many, but we're putting it out. I'm going to probably release the details tomorrow, but we're going to have like hundreds of people come and see us at a bar and like sign autographs and like take pictures. And we're just three dudes who are like talking on a microphone about Iowa football. And it's crazy. You kind of follow where your fans are telling you to go. And it's so, you know, it's so cliche, but like, if you love doing it, it's going to continue to grow no matter what. You just sort of have to trust that process, even if you're not seeing the results that you'd like to see or that some other show is seeing, right? And yeah, I don't even know if that answers your question, but yeah.
One question I have, and like, I love this, like the concept that you guys have of your show is like, have you ever thought about, because it is a sports media brand, thought of making this like doing it other, like having it at other schools, having other washed up walk-ons from at other football programs?
When we started to grow, that was one of the first thoughts I had. Mm-hmm. You know, fortunately and unfortunately, now everything comes with this cost basis, risk reward kind of mindset. Mm-hmm. In the beginning, it was like, hey, yeah, let's just do what we want because we want to do it and there's no money attached to it, so who cares? Now it's like, okay, should we put our time and effort into this? And is it financially going to return us, you know, a decent amount on our investment, right? And one of my ideas was, well, we're the washed up walk-ons at Iowa, but what if I reach out to every school in the country and find one or two guys who just graduated, who were walk-ons at the program and just graduated as seniors, and see if they want to start up a podcast? I'll teach them how to do it. I'll even produce it the first couple times if I have to. And now all of a sudden we have the washed up walk-ons Iowa State, the washed up walk-ons Florida Gators, the washed up walk-ons Texas Longhorns. And there's really no good reason why I haven't done that, other than I don't care so much about that. That would be a venture that would really be financially driven, like 100%. Because I don't give a shit about those guys. Like, I don't care about two guys that I don't know from Clemson doing a Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast. The only reason I'm searching out them is like, hey, we create our own network where we start working with sponsors on our own, brokering our own deals. And then you guys bring us more ears, right? We can only reach so many ears, and our podcast is only so big with the Hawks, but we can grow that exponentially if we get 5,000 listeners a podcast per episode from the Clemson fan base, and 5,000 per from the Trojan fan base, and from the Oregon Duck fan base. And that takes it to a financial level of like, oh, this is an empire now. But it also spreads my energy away from our product, right? And I've had other jobs throughout this entire thing. I was coaching 30 hours a week as a personal trainer and fitness instructor right up until the start of the pandemic. When the pandemic hit, I went heavy into online coaching and fitness consulting and nutrition consulting. So it's not the only thing I do. And I just don't have enough time to take it to that level. Not that I won't at some point, because I do still think that's a really, really good idea. But right now, again, risk reward, cost basis sort of thing, it doesn't cross the line yet.
Was there ever a point in this experience the last 3-4 years where you were like, we're growing too fast, or oh, like this is taking on a level that like it's a little too big for what we wanted, like not for what we wanted this to be, but what we were, you know, expecting it to be, like just caught off guard, like a little bit, like, you know, do I want a platform, you know, with so many years?
Yeah, it's that's a really good question. I think the general answer is no. Because when you're getting so much attention, like to some extent, people look at us as like, you know, Iowa famous, right? Like if Tyler Kluver and Drake Kulik and Kevin Ward, they're like Iowa famous in our ecosphere, right? And that's cool. Like that's cool as hell, right? Who doesn't want to be known? And like, you know, I'm walking around Kinnick with my wife this past, you know, these last 7 or 12 weeks for the home games, and people are like recognizing me. And my wife just looks at me like, Jesus Christ, like, seriously, like people recognize you around. And it's like, that's awesome. Like, I think most people would sign up to be like famous, right? Even though we're not nearly famous. The first time it ever happened where I was like, oh, we're in a little bit over our head here, is when we started our podcast in 2018. We had merchandise out within 6 weeks because people wanted Hawks by a Million on a t-shirt. And I think we put like this logo on a t-shirt as well. And we had like 2 or 3 designs, and we sold $36,000 worth of revenue.
Wow.
And we were we had no idea we were going to do that much. Profit wise, that was about $9,000 or $10,000 that we were going to make. Wow. And we were like, holy shit. Like this is, what is going on? Like I was like $3,000. That's like a month. I don't have to work for a month now. Like that's pretty cool. At the time, and we were with a company merchandise wise that then backed out on the Hawks by a Million design because they didn't do it right licensing wise. And so we had to refund all $36,000 of that. Not only that. So yeah, I love your faces here because this is one of our better stories. And this actually slowed us down growth wise. We had to refund all of that money. And not only that, it was right before Christmas. So our whole thing was like, fuck. I was like, everybody get your Christmas gifts, your Hawks by a Million merchandise. Like this is, and then a bunch of people were left without Christmas presents and dealing with like a refund coming back on their credit card. And that was all associated with our brand and like our product and ability to get things done. So that was the initial one. Like, okay, we didn't know what we were doing. We were with the wrong people vendor wise for our clothing, and that screwed us. Since then we haven't had anything that bad, but there's always moments where I'm like, where does this go? Like where, like I'm in it, and it's sort of the entrepreneur-ish side of things, but it's like, I'll wake up some mornings and it's like, holy shit, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, how do we keep making this show? Like, what if Drake's threatened to quit like twice because he gets bored or he gets pissed and or his CTE kicks in and Kevin has a real job, so he doesn't even show up for half the episodes. And I'm sitting here thinking, you know, everybody told me like, oh, you guys, this is awesome because you guys know all the players right now, but in a few years, you're not going to know anybody. So how are you guys going to be relevant? Why would people still listen to you? So that was something that we always have dealt with. And there's days all the time where I wake up and I'm just like, I don't know where this goes. Like, what if people stop listening? What if people don't care? What if everybody cancels their Patreon subscriptions? Like, this is my income now. So what's going on here? And it's just like, Every time it's just, okay, we'll get through the day. I do the content that I need to put out today. We'll continue to produce it and we'll just continue to work it one day at a time. And, but yeah, otherwise, I would say the iHeart thing was really big. It wasn't a moment of like, you know, cause the great thing about this is like, even though our audience could change, we could have a million people listen to us. Right. And we'd be like, holy shit, that's a lot of, I mean, my bank account would be fat if a million people listened to us, but the product wouldn't change, right? Like mm-hmm. It's still just an hour long podcast twice a week. So it's not like the workload jumps a lot. So there isn't ever really a moment of, at least within the podcast structure of where I'm like, whoa, we're weighing over our heads. We got Chad Greenway on. I have Zach Johnson's phone number, like the pro golfer.
That's cool.
We had Big E on after that weekend at the Penn State game. I have his phone number. There's a few moments through this whole thing where I'm like, okay, well, that's pretty cool. There's no reason that should happen. But unless we start to look otherwise, like the Patreon venture was like, okay, we're going to do this. We have to do this, right? Like we're thinking about creating our own charity golf tournament starting next summer. And that's a venture where it's like, okay, this isn't just a podcast. Like we have to figure this out and then run this on a weekend and like rent out a golf course. Those are the kinds of things where it's like, let's pump the brakes before we just keep adding shit to our plate. Cause otherwise it could go wrong. So yeah, man, those are some of the examples of at least that question.
One thing I was just curious, one of my final questions for you is, becoming, you know, you said at the beginning, like, you know, you aren't, but you are a member of the media, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
Now having players on or people you haven't met before, who are affiliated with Iowa football in some capacity, how have you learned to be a good interviewer? Like, how was it just the reps, or was it, you know, did you do certain things? Is it the prep, the research before? How did you kind of get comfortable in that position?
That's a really good question. First of all, great interview right there. That's a good question. For me, I listen to, you know, I probably have 12 or 15 podcasts that I listen to, ones that I'm entertained by, you know, Joe Rogan, a couple fitness podcasts, Tim Ferriss show is a big one for me. And I love the way that he interviews people. So the guys that are huge and the ones that I respect the most, I listen to their podcast, not only in an entertainment way, but almost in a educational way. And it ruins things sometimes because I'm not just like mindlessly working out and listening to an awesome episode of whatever guest they have on. I'm critiquing like, how did he ask this question? What was the flow of when he interrupted his guest and when he didn't, what inflection in his voice, like all these little things, right? And I still don't think I'm very good at it, but I've gotten much better. And reps, editing helps because I say a lot or and I just cut those out. So that's something I'm trying to work on right now, but studying the way that people talk and ask questions. And then I think genuinely the best questions are the ones that are true and legit questions that you yourself have, right? Not ones that you think your guests would like, don't ask questions that you think your guests would think were good questions. Don't ask questions that you think your audience would like. just ask questions that genuinely intrigue you. Like the question you just asked was, how did you become a better interviewer? Because those genuine questions, people are going to love the content of you learning something that you, the interviewer, are actually interested in versus like, what's your favorite experience at the University of Iowa? Like, that's a bad question, right? But like, you know, I don't know where to go from there as far as like a good question in the reverse of that. But the things that you're genuinely interested in as the interviewer, as the host of the show, are always going to do better than what you think good questions would be for the audience, right? And yeah, just always working on prep is, we used to do almost no prep, and I still almost do no prep because that's sort of our brand, right? We just go off the cuff, but it has gotten a lot more. Like if you can have segments of your show, or you have at least a general outline of flow with like subtopics, that makes it a lot easier as well. Here's another one. Never be too specific if you're asking a question, because it'll make the guest try and overthink it. Whereas if you let them be a little bit more general, they will find their way to an answer that is better, right? So for example, you guys could ask me, what's your number one memory from your time at Iowa, right? And I'll give you like the generic answer that I give everybody else, because that's the question that most people ask. But if you ask me, what are some of your better experiences during your 5 years? Just the wording of what are some of your better experiences versus what is the number one experience? That's going to open me up to a little bit more leeway of, what are some of the experiences that it'll make the person answering the question, they will elaborate a little bit more. And that's a good tip as well.
So that kind of leads into my final question that we love to ask all current Iowa athletes, former Iowa athletes that we have on the podcast. And I'm really interested to hear your answer is, what does being a Hawkeye mean to you?
You think that's a good question or a bad question?
I thought it was good.
I know, it's a good question.
No one's ever said it's a bad one, so this would have been a first.
We've had one person not being able to like give an answer. We were sure. Like, I mean, come on. Like,
I'm not. Yeah, no, I understand. I understand what you're trying to get at there in the question. I think for me, it's I'm not into like the cheesy shit. I'm not going to be the guy who, you know, 20 years from now is like, the University of Iowa means so much to me, right? But being a Hawkeye is something that means something to me because I relate that with my time as a football player. When I think of I'm a Hawkeye, I immediately think of the times where we would go downtown to Formosa and people would be like, oh shit, that they play football, right? Like people notice who we are because you just know who athletes are and they all wear the gray sweats. The backpacks give you away too. And if it's a basketball player, they're 9 feet tall. So, so it's like, those are the times I think about. And when I was a little kid, I just wanted to be a Hawkeye football player. And then that became reality. And then when I was in college, all I wanted to do was have freedom. When I got into the work world of, I don't want to sit at a desk. I don't want to have to clock in. I don't want a boss telling me what to do. And now, though I still feel very insecure about the job security of what I'm doing now, it's getting better. I'm doing that. I'm living out that dream as well. And so when I think about being a Hawkeye, it is the first example, probably not the first example, but a huge example in my life that if you actually want to do something, it can be done, but not the bullshit. Oh, you can be anything. You can do anything. It is going to take an incredible amount of work, but it's always worth it. It's always worth it. Even if it ends up being something different than you thought it would be when you were a little kid, the work and the process and the grind to get there is going to take you to a place that is so worth it. And that's what I think about when that being a Hawkeye is a huge example of me just living out sort of that philosophy.
And one final question to wrap it up. Score prediction for the game.
Ooh, I would love to tell you Hawks by a million or
something. Yeah, I was going to say, that was an alley-oop. I was waiting for
that. Yeah, I would love to, I would love to tell you that. And, you know, and I hate predictions too. I'm not exactly big on guessing exact scores.
I didn't think you were going to give me an exact score. I just thought it was going to be Hawks by a million and we were out of here.
No, it's not going to be Hawks by a million. I will say, like, the Hawks can win this game 7 or 8 out of 10 times. They don't. If I'm actually, if you like put a gun to my head and said, you have to guess as close to the score as you can, I would say the Hawks cover the spread, but lose by a touchdown. But they just have to make it gritty. They have to be in a fight. Those boys are going to have to be ready to absolutely go to war physically so that Michigan understands like this is a 4-quarter, 60-minute game. If they can make it that kind of game deep into the third quarter, I think Iowa has a chance to win it with a field goal late. That's what I'll say.
Well, the one final question, and you mentioned it on your show last week about the Nebraska game, and one of the keys to like that game, and I agreed with it 1,000,000% with special teams, and Iowa going on top of special teams, like they capitalize on mistakes. They're a very opportunistic team. I don't know how much Michigan you've watched. I really haven't watched a ton, but like, are there any chinks in that armor to where we could say Michigan is not as disciplined and that there are these like capabilities, or is it just we could sit here and say that's the same for any football team? Because it was pretty evident with Nebraska that they shot themselves to death and we just capitalized on all of it. So I am of the ilk where I think unless Michigan doesn't make a mistake, like it will be really hard for the Hawkeyes to, I think, win the game.
Yeah, you're right. You're right about that. The good thing is our special teams and our defense are good at forcing those mistakes, even to people who don't make any. And I'll just point you right to Tua's brother at Maryland hadn't thrown an interception until we played them. And he finished the night like tied for third in the country in interceptions. Yeah. Right. So yeah. Michigan unfortunately has good special teams. They are not Nebraska. Mm. That would yeah. help us out. we have to force a couple turnovers and we have to get one or two big plays on special teams. The opportunities will be there. The margins will be small. And so the work that they put in this week in preparation for that game is going to be ultra, ultra important.
Well, Tyler, we can't thank you enough for taking the time and coming on. Like always, guys, not the same time, same place. We will see you guys later.